old 10,000-year-old trees with skinny, near-leafless limbs, monolithic ruins and cliffside petroglyphs 10 times older, and shallow seasonal lakes dotted with flamboyant birds. At length, that first twilight, he spotted something. A stately quadruped 2 meters tall, striped in black and white and crowned with graceful curving horns. My first animal in the wild. The others spied it as well, without the aid of magnifying lenses. And Jova brought the speeder to a jarring halt, but not, as it happened, to gaze on the beauty of the beast. In unison, the antique rifles came up and half a dozen shots rang out. Through the glasses, Wilhuff watched the majestic creature leap up, then fall heavily onto its side. And a moment later, they were all hurrying through the sharp grass in an effort to reach their kill before other predators or scavengers could arrive, and also to get to it while it was still warm. Wilhuff asked himself what the creature had done to deserve such a fate. If it, too, had come to the carrion to learn the meaning of survival, it had failed miserably. The Rhodians rolled the animal onto its back, and from a sheath strapped to his thigh, Jova drew a well-used vibroblade. "Cut straight up from between the legs to the throat," he said, handing Wilhuff the knife, "and take care not to make a mess of the innards." Fortifying himself, worried as much about fainting as about disappointing his elders, Wilhuff plunged the point of the weapon through the creature's fur and flesh and tasked the vibroblade to cut. Hot maroon blood spurted, striking him full in the face. The Rhodians seemed almost gleeful as it dripped from the tip of his nose to his chin and down the front of his pristine vest, saturating the seams and pockets he had stitched with such care. "Good cut," Jova said when the carcass had parted, the smell of the beast's entrails nearly overwhelming Wilhuff. "Now you reach deep in there." He indicated a place in the torso. "And follow the rear curve of the breathing muscle until your hands find the liver, then pull it out. Go on. Do it. Do it, I said." In went his hesitant, shaking hands, maneuvering through squishy, bulbous organs until they found a heavy lump rich with blood. He had to yank several times before the liver broke free of its fibrous net of blood vessels and ligaments, and he nearly fell backward when it did. Then Jova took the slippery, uncooperative thing into his calloused hands and began tearing chunks from it. "This one's for you," his uncle said, placing the largest of the pieces in the palm of Wilhuff's already blooded hand. He motioned with his chin. "Go ahead now. Down it goes." Once more, Wilhuff focused on living up to expectations, and when he had gotten past his revulsion and devoured the chunk, his uncles and the Rhodians celebrated his act with a short song in a language Wilhuff didn't understand. Celebrated Wilhuff's first step, the opening stage in an initiation that wouldn't conclude until years later, at the Carrion Spike. While Iriado didn't have indigenous creatures as large as the Rancor or as unusual as the Sarlacc, it did boast ferocious felines, carnivorous crustaceans, and a species of Viamok far more fierce and cunning than others in its primate family. For the next month, Wilhuff did little more than follow in the tracks of his elders, observing predators of many varieties killing and devouring one another, and learning how to keep himself from being similarly devoured. There was no denying that witnessing death up close was a far more visceral experience than watching such events transpire in holodramas viewed in the airy tranquility of his bedroom. Still, he struggled to understand just what he was supposed to be taking away from the close encounters. Could daily brushes with death transform a simply ordinary person into one who was larger than life? Even if that was possible, how could that transformation have an impact on the lives of Nama and others like him? He might have been able to puzzle out the answers were he less preoccupied day to day with being set upon and eaten by the beasts they stalked. Gradually, the routine changed from merely observing kills to stealing them. Frequently, the Rhodians would use their vibro-lances to drive killer beasts back from their quarries and hold them at bay while Wilhuff rushed in to complete the theft. Other times, it would be Wilhuff's turn to wield a vibro-lance and someone else who would make the grab. "We are teaching them how to behave in the presence of their betters," Jova said. "The ones who learn profit from the laws we lay down. The rest die." He wanted to make certain Wilhuff understood. "Never try to live decently, boy. Not unless you're willing to open your life to tragedy and sadness. Live like a beast, and no event, no matter how harrowing, will ever be able to move you." When his uncle decided that Wilhuff had experienced enough stealing, it came time to do the actual hunting. And so Jova and the others began to teach him tactical methods for taking advantage of the wind or the angle of the light. They taught him how to defend against attacks by groups of beasts by confounding them with unexpected moves. They taught him to kill by concentrating all his power on one point. All the while, the vest became more bloodied and tattered, until ultimately it was useless except as a rag, and he was on his own, without a uniform or costume to hide within. The routine of tracking, hunting, killing, and cooking over